Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake LaQuire. And this past Sunday, we witnessed what I thought would be the final outcome, but how we got there completely blew my mind away. And obviously, overtime thriller, Panthers come out on top against Atlanta in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, 30-27. Overtime thriller. Absolute banger of a game. We came from behind at one point down 21-7. Bryce Young now has 10 game-winning drives since entering the league in 2023. He is now first out of all quarterbacks since 2023. Can you name the four quarterbacks with 9 game-winning drives during that same span?
Well, it would be Patrick Mahomes. A lot of people consider best in the league. The MVP last year, Josh Allen, is one of them as well.
Correct.
I'm a bit foggy on the third one, but I do know that Geno Smith is the fourth one.
Geno Smith is the third one.
Would it be Joe Burrow? I don't think they have enough wins.
Think about someone that is dogged for playing the position a little bit differently, especially on later downs.
Would it be a certain Super Bowl MVP, Jalen Hurts? Is that who it is?
It would be. Jalen Hurts is the other quarterback with 9 game-winning drives. So Bryce Young, he's first in that department. He set the franchise record, 448 passing yards, passing Cam Newton's previous record of 432, set back in 2011, needed overtime to do it. What was your biggest takeaway from this game? Because honestly, I was a little blown away, especially how things were looking towards the end of the first quarter.
Well, it was interesting, right? All weekend, we got a lot of division matchups, right? So on Thursday, we started with the Patriots and the Jets. Patriots rivalry uniforms, by the way, phenomenal. They should redo their whole aesthetic based on those kind of light blue, almost Carolina blue uniforms. We had Seattle and the Rams. I would consider the two best teams in the NFC, at least. That was a good game. Not a good game if you're a Seahawks fan. The Niners and the Cardinals. And then, of course, we had the Chiefs and the Broncos as well. And that had a lot of implications on the AFC standings. Now Broncos 9-2. Then we get to our game, not in chronological order because we played at 1 o'clock, but the Panthers and the Falcons. I was hesitant about whether or not we could win coming into this one. But Bryce Young on, we could say, like a bum ankle, because it wasn't just one play where he got injured. There are a lot of plays where he got stepped on or he got cleated by a rusher in his Achilles area on a bad ankle. I don't think that's the same ankle that he got injured in the Jets game, but absolutely delivered in the second half. The first half is where he got hurt. It was a little bit iffy. There was a 4th-and-1 that we came up short on. But in the second half, over 300 yards. And just a phenomenal game. 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Only 4 quarterbacks have thrown for 400 yards in a game this season. Do you know who the other 3 are?
What was the stat again?
400 yards.
400 yards. And you said 3 other quarterbacks have
done it? 3 others.
Mm-hmm. I think Dak Prescott is one of them.
He is not. He's come up just short. Joe Flacco is the number one. He threw for like 480. In that game against Chicago.
It was the Chicago game. And then is it one or two other guys? Because obviously I didn't hit with Dak. So it's 2 other guys.
One's a gunslinger out west. And then...
Is it Mahomes? No,
in that division.
It's Geno Smith.
Justin Herbert.
Oh, yes. I'm over here. Justin Herbert early on the season was on fire.
One is a guy who doesn't start anymore, but had just a phenomenal, I think it was a Sunday night game against this team where it went to overtime and they ended up losing.
You got me on this one. So overtime, you're talking Russell Wilson with the, was it the Giants?
It was the Giants against the Cowboys. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was another 400 game, but Bryce Young is the only one to not throw a pick in those games. He also threw 3 touchdowns in this one. He could have gotten 4, I think, if Tommy Trimble were a little bit faster. But we obviously ended up with the game-winning field goal in overtime. It's just that second half was crazy. We came out of halftime down 14. I thought it was going to be another oh, our defense can't stop the run. We're just going to get consistently scored upon. But the defense locked in the second half. Bryce Young locked in and delivered. Just a all-timer for the franchise, right? You mentioned Cam's game, 432 yards. That was his first ever game, right? I think that was the 432, and then his second. No. Oh, so it the first one was like 420
against Arizona.
Okay,
it was 422 against Arizona, and then 432. I don't know what he probably had rushing yards, so he might have had more total yards on the day. But I know in regulation, because obviously Bryce Young, without that Tommy Tremble pass, he does not pass the franchise record.
Right, he would have been at 398 going into overtime. But the fortunate thing is we got the win on that one. Cam's first two games, we didn't get the wins. He won his third game against Jacksonville, right? And that was the Monsoon Bowl. It was like 11 to 9 or something. Yeah, I think
he had like sub 200 passing yards in that
game. It was probably sub 100 because there's so much rain. Like that was a muddy game, but we got the win there. Happy to get the win in this one. The Panthers are on a 3-road game win streak at this point, and that was a big contention for Bryce Young coming into the season, was road games and road wins. But now we've won in MetLife, which was never an easy stadium with that turf. We've won in Lambeau, probably the hardest stadium to go to and play, and now in Atlanta, a stadium that isn't difficult for Bryce Young whatsoever. He kind of lives in that stadium, and I know you pulled up some stats you want to talk about how Bryce Young has performed in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's kind of like his second home and his football career.
I mean, from a kid out west, you would have thought he was born in Atlanta, Georgia, because like when he comes to this stadium, it is his property. I mean, you go back to the SEC championship, he drops 421 passing yards. He had four total touchdowns on the day, beats Georgia in that championship game. So obviously doesn't win the national title, missed a couple players, but in that stadium, completely balled out. His first ever NFL game, his first NFL touchdown, happened in that stadium in week one of 2023 to Hayden Hurst. Then you go to last year, and it's still technically calendar year of 2025. You have that overtime thriller where he has the no-look pass to Tommy Tremble. They win 44-38. He has a total of five touchdowns, three through the air, two on the ground. And like just – like incredible things like constantly happening. And then to wrap it up, what we just saw this past Sunday, and we've been going over the statistics, but just like the fact that you're able to put up these kind of volume stats and just video game numbers in this stadium. Like I was saying this off air in a couple different group chats, but like you need to build this exact stadium in Charlotte. Like I don't care what it takes, but you got to like carbon copy whatever is in that stadium and bring it to Charlotte, because you need to see that half the games out of the year. And you should as fans. I mean, that's what the Saints had with Drew Brees down in the dome for how many years? And so I think that's in the team's best interest moving forward. And I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but as we're wrapping up this discussion, there's something I wanted to highlight. And where you talked about Bryce Young getting kind of cleated multiple times, that first time he kind of got stepped on was Bowman at the end of the first. He goes to the tunnel. We think Andy Dalton's about to come in. All of a sudden, we're down 21-10 at half. He looks a little banged up. Like you said, gets hit a couple more times. You're not sure about him finishing the game. And you know who didn't finish the game? You know who didn't finish the game? Michael Penix. You know what? Bryce Young should tell him to go ice up, because he finished the game and he won the team the game. Because I think if Penix was able to stay in, he was playing well enough, that team probably would have found a way to put a few more points on the board that Kirk Cousins wasn't able to do. But Bryce Young, resilient as all get out, a big reason why he was the first overall pick. Anything else you want to talk about with just the performance we saw on Sunday? Because whether it was some in-breakers, obviously a little high to T-Mac or Coker, or hitting guys on out-breaking routes, he was on time and almost flawless all day.
We'll give Kirk Cousins credit for the one drive to tie the game and send it to overtime, a field goal drive. But other than that, nothing. Bryce Young threw to nine different receivers, and five of them had over 50 or more yards. Obviously, T-Mac, 130 yards, two touchdowns on eight receptions. Rico Dowdle had 100 total yards. Not a lot on the ground, though. Lee Gett had a very good game. They connected on an almost identical play to the play they didn't connect on in the Saints game last week. Jalen Coker got involved. Tommy Tremble, obviously, the long catch and run to set up the game-winning field goal. Bryce's toughness, I think, was a good thing you brought up. I think the perception of Bryce, just because he's a smaller player in comparison to the other QBs, is that he's more fragile or he's not as tough as the other players. I would say it's the opposite. Even going back to college, he gets blasted on hits and then just gets back up and keeps going. Like on this one, I thought from the look of it, he would have maybe not torn his Achilles, but like had a sprained ankle or something, the way that they were like showing the angles and stuff like that. But they gave him the good stuff in the locker room and he came back out there. And as Dave Canales said, he gave him a thumbs up, and Canales in his presser said, "Well, that's good enough for me. Get in there." I guess he didn't want to see any more of Andy Dalton this season. Comes back in, gets hurt again, but still delivers. Just pure toughness from the former number one overall pick. I want to talk about the defense a little bit as well. Like you said, we allowed three scores in the first half, all of them rushing. And then in the second half, we kind of blanked them, allowed two field goals. Obviously, the one overtime, or to set up overtime, it's kind of the Evero special, like playing extremely deep coverage to not allow the touchdown. So that one I understand. And then I think their second drive was the other field goal. They really locked in at halftime. They just learned how to tackle again. What the first half reminded me of last year, like against the Bengals, where you were in position to get Ja'Marr Chase on the ground, T. Higgins, Chase Brown, all these guys. You just forget how to tackle. That's how the first half looked with Bijan Robinson, with Drake London. But then they locked in and settled it in the second half. So really, really good to see. You brought up Michael Penix getting injured. Drake London also getting injured in this game. What do we make of the Falcons going forward? Because this was a team that you, if it continues to play out this way, you correctly clocked as a team that could be the worst in the division this season. Like, this has got to be disappointing. They had lost four in a row coming into this game. Now it's five in a row after a, I think they started 3-2 or something like that. How do we feel about the Falcons? Don't get me wrong, I love to sweep them, first time since 2013, but I feel like it's just the slightest bit bad for them because they thought that they were going to compete with the big dogs this year.
So, obviously, this isn't like an apple to orange comparison, but the Rams, they make the big trade for Stafford. They send two firsts, and obviously one of those firsts ends up being a top five pick after the Rams win the Super Bowl. They have a couple injuries, but, like, who cares on, like, the Rams front? Like, you win the Super Bowl, but the Broncos try to copy this. They make the big trade for Russell Wilson. They send all these picks because they feel like they're a player away, and then they end up sending what in essence amounts to like a top five pick to the Seattle Seahawks, who get Devin Witherspoon, who is a big part of what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. So then you go to what the Atlanta Falcons just did. And the argument from their fan base pretty much surmounts to, hey, James Pierce was the guy they were going to take at their pick in the first round. Jalen Walker, they didn't think was going to fall to him. So the fact that they could get Jalen Walker at their pick, they felt was a steal. And when James Pierce continued the fall, they decided to trade back into the first round using next year's first, thinking, hey, we had a first round grade. We were going to take him in the first round here. Let's just grab him now. And so now with all this doubling down on the defensive side, you strapped yourself next offseason. But then you look at what they did just last year with drafting Michael Penix and signing Kirk Cousins. It's like, both of those decisions have blown up in your face. Like, Terry Fontenot, from a process and evaluation standpoint, has completely tanked this franchise within a matter of 2 years, to where you're not in a position where you can go fix things in free agency or find a couple stop gags with making a couple trades. Like, you don't have the draft capital or resources to do that. And it's unfortunate. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of talent and is banking on a lot of young players developing. And obviously, like, we saw firsthand on Sunday, Drake London and Bijan Robinson, when they were getting the ball, I mean, they were able to just move the chains. And it was insane. It was like the second drive after we forced a three and out on the first drive, that it was just both Bijan and Drake London. It felt like it was one play, one of them would get the ball, and the other play, the other one would. And they just marched down the field doing that. And it's insane to have that kind of talent. But you don't have a quarterback who can properly facilitate that. And that almost makes it to where you're back at square one. And again, without a first round pick.
Yeah. And the quarterback that they did select has a history of significant injuries that are season ending. I believe they placed him on IR today. They said there was some at least partial ACL damage in his knee. following the game. So it looks like he's done for the season.
And if you get surgery, like we're talking 9 month recovery. So it's like, you could miss some of like next year. You're not going to be fresh come in the week one because you're going to miss training camp. And it's just like, that's crazy.
And at that point, do you keep Kirk Cousins and commit his bonuses that are going to impact your cap sheet for next year? Like they have decisions to make, but it's not like they can draft a QB this year. So they kind of just have to stew with what they have. It's a really tough situation. We're kind of talking about their draft pick. I feel like they're almost guaranteed to give the Rams a top, let's say, 6 to 8 pick at this point, right? They the Falcons play the New Orleans Saints this week. And if the Saints beat them, that pushes the Falcons to the bottom in the division and would push their pick, which is currently 8th, to, I think, 5th. And that's like prime QB trade-ish territory. This could be setting the Rams up for like multiple, not generations, but like multiple windows to keep open with their quarterback right now playing at an MVP level with a loaded roster. Then they go and add a top 5 pick to it. I don't know. This is looking like one of the worst trades that we've seen recently.
It really is because of the fallout from it. And that's why I was trying to tie it back to like what we saw with the Denver Broncos, where it's like, you really think you're on the precipice of being like a playoff contender and you end up sending somebody a top 5 pick. And it's that was the thought process that the Falcons had. Like Terry Fontenot literally during the 2024 NFL draft said, hey, we're not going to end up with a top 10 pick. And you're right. They aren't, because they aren't going to be able to use it. So I guess he kind of had a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, but it's just, it's mind-boggling that you aren't able to do like the self-evaluation work and look at yourself in the mirror and see that you're not a team ready to compete. And to send that kind of capital for really guesswork is really imprudent, and you see the results already halfway through the year. So I would not be shocked if the Falcons lose to the Saints next week, that maybe Terry Fontenot's fired in season, that they start doing some reshuffling and trying to find a way to pivot from the mess they're in currently.
And it'll be hard to attract a premium general manager or head coaching candidate if Raheem Morris ends up fired when you have an injured QB and no pick, which is going to be a top 10 pick. The final thing I'll say about the Falcons is I think the irony with this team is they had all these top 10 picks for like a string of time, right? It started with Pitts, and then they took London, Bijan Robinson, and then Michael Penix. But their offense was at full power, like firing on full cylinders, when Kirk Cousins was the starter before he got injured. Then he started to taper off, and then Penix came in, and it was hit or miss. And I think that they saw the total season result and said, look, we have the 15th pick. We're a close to 500 team. If we can fix the defense, that'll fix everything. But it didn't fix, like the offense fell off because they weren't getting pre-injury Kirk Cousins back. And Penix more or less was the same as last season. So it's just a good lesson in self-scouting, like you're saying. I changed my mind. I don't feel bad for the Falcons whatsoever. If any franchise deserves this, it's them and the New Orleans Saints. But I think going forward, we don't have to worry about the Falcons anymore this year. We put them in the grave, swept them for the first time in 12 years. It seems bizarre. Yeah, it seems bizarre. You know what happened in 2013?
We won the division.
We won the division. And
by first round playoff exit.
De facto winning the division, we went to the playoffs. And I think a big step in that direction, if we're going to do it this year, is going to have to be our upcoming game, which is not on Sunday. It's on Monday. It's our only primetime game this year. Monday Night Football in San Francisco against the 49ers. I think coming into the year, I was a lot more nervous about this game. Like I thought that this was a guaranteed, you know, they're going to smoke us by 50 or whatever. But with injuries that they've sustained throughout the year, with how the Panthers have played on the road, like inspiring play on the road recently, I think this could be an actual fun, competitive game to watch, and one that has implications to where the loser of this game is probably guaranteed out of the playoffs because the winner will have the tiebreaker over them in a wild card hunt.
This game provides a lot of interesting matchups. I don't know if Evero is going to be able to keep up with Kyle Shanahan and just the way he's able to create space for his playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, this is a team that just dropped over 40 points on Jonathan Gannon this past Sunday, and they don't even have Brandon Ayuk in the lineup. And I don't want to necessarily say the Panthers defense is better than the Cardinals, but I would definitely put them on similar levels in terms of just talent on all three levels. And so makes it a little bit interesting of how we match up on that side of the ball. But if you look on the offensive side, I feel a lot better about this matchup than I did at the top of the year, like you're saying, because there is no Nick Bosa. There is no Fred Warner. They have lost a lot of guys on that side of the ball to where we just saw Jacoby Brissett complete 47 passes, setting an NFL record. I mean, he had a tremendous success rate passing the ball in these expected pass situations because they fell into a hole early. And he was able to put up some pretty impressive numbers. So if Bryce Young is able to build off what he just did in Atlanta, the 49ers, if they're selling out to stop the run, like, can Bryce Young lean into that? And I think it's just a matter of understanding how Robert Saleh decides to play this offense. He's not selling out to stop the run like Atlanta is. Stay more balanced. I think that was what made Bryce's day so special, is Atlanta was driving these safeties into the box to help with the run game on some of these play action looks. If you can get the 49ers to do the same thing, like, he very well could have another 300 passing yard day, but it's just a matter of understanding what Robert Saleh is trying to take away and leaning in the other direction. And I think that's what made Dave Canales so special on Sunday, is he had the perfect counter with that game plan. And you have to duplicate that again in San Francisco if you want to come away with the win.
To that point, I don't know if they can sell out to stop the run. I don't know if they have the people to do it, right? Nick Bosa's out for the year.
It's down to like a numbers game. Like, the Falcons, like, right, obviously they have lighter bodies, so it's like you put eight in the box, so you have that extra guy. So it's like, do the 49ers do that? Do they play a lot of man coverage, or do they play zone and dare Bryce to beat them with their arm?
I think that's a good point. You mentioned Nick Bosa's out for the year. Mykael Williams, their first-round pick, was a phenomenal run defender when he was on the field this year. He's out for the season. Fred Warner's out. Fred Warner's replacement, Tatum Bethune, who I've seen a lot of 49ers fans and beat writers really rave about, he's going to be missing the next several weeks. So they're down to D. Winters and, I believe, Nick Martin, the rookie linebacker in that room there. Then it's the defensive backs, right? Malik Mustafa has been banged up this year. Diamador Lenore is probably their best corner. He's had up and down play, I would say. So if you're able to get similar performances from McMillan, Leggett, who had a very good game, I think this was the perfect usage game for Leggett. A lot of crossers to get him yak, a lot of off the line, straight line speed stuff where he could succeed. I think if you do a lot of that stuff, it can be competitive. My biggest worry, though, is on the other side of the ball, like you're talking about. I think Evero can match up. We saw him pretty much shut down Matt LaFleur's offense, and LaFleur is another creative mind in that game as well. Obviously, Jordan Love had some bozo plays. Brock Purdy is a very bozo quarterback. We've seen in high-leverage situations that he doesn't necessarily see players that are open. So if you can speed Purdy up, I think that could be a big factor. However, you said there's no Ayuk. It doesn't even matter if Ricky Pearsall is going to be playing, because they have George Kittle and they have Christian McCaffrey. And I think that those two players are going to be like the bane of our defense all night in that game. I think CMC, with how our linebackers have been banged up, is going to have a field day. And I really question how we're going to be able to cover George Kittle when we've committed somebody like Trayvon Merrick to being a huge, like, box player and run stopper. Don't get me wrong, Merrick's been the best run stopping safety in the league this year. He leads in tackles for loss for safety. He's a very big run stopper. I don't know how he or anyone else is going to match up with Kittle in particular if we're going to be doing any man-to-man stuff. But Evero likes to do a lot of zone because that's kind of his defensive philosophy. That's who I worry about the most, is Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle.
And rightfully so. Those two just had monster days this past week. McCaffrey's been on a roll the entire season, but I would not undersell Ricky Purcell's, I guess, contribution, because so much of what they did against Arizona was because of what he offered. I mean, his field stretching abilities on some deep outs and posts cleared a lot of the field for guys like Juwan Jennings and George Kittle and obviously Christian McCaffrey underneath. So that's, I think, what I'm talking about more with regards to Kyle Shanahan and spacing. It's if Evero, it's like, hey, you're going to play your traditional like coverage looks, and they like playing a lot of cover three, and Kyle Shanahan actually leans more into, and he's not a big play action guy, but maybe leans into more some of his traditional stuff with a blend of the inside and outside zone running scheme. And it's like, all of a sudden you could be in some hot mess because of just how diverse the weapons are for the 49ers. And I just don't think our defense is equipped for that necessarily. I think we have our moments, and we definitely have our fastball, but some of the changeups and curveballs you need with personnel rotations, I just don't think we're at that point in terms of the rebuild of that unit.
Yeah, and especially if Trevon Wallace misses another game. Christian Roseboom left the game toward the end, so as weak as their linebacker department is, ours is equally as damaged, especially if we miss our two starters. Obviously, we don't compare to the talent that Fred Warner is, but in terms of a depth standpoint, it's going to be it'll likely be backups on backups in that department. I think that it could be a shootout. Obviously, they kind of shut down the Cardinals from a scoring perspective, but the fact that Brissett was able to complete that many passes, I think, shows if they had maybe more explosive downfield receivers like McMillan and Leggett showed this past week, that the Cardinals could have put up numbers. So I think we're going to see a lot of scoring. Both teams are going to have an extra day of rest, so that could contribute as well. Ultimately, though, I would like to say we win, but it's going to be a tough one. I think CMC, this is going to be my perfect take. I think McCaffrey is going to get two or more scores against us. It's, I don't know if it's going to be a revenge game, so to speak, but he liked Carolina. I'm sure he wasn't thrilled about being traded away at like 3:30 a.m. on a Thursday or whenever that trade went down. And I'm sure he's going to not only want to score, but have multiple opportunities to do so. So I think high scoring affair, and McCaffrey's going to get two of them, I think, is my take this week.
Wow. Already leaning in the perfect takes as we wrap up the segment. I think honestly, the team that wins is the team that's able to take advantage of kind of the middle of the field. Like we talk about the linebackers being concerned for both squads, who can take advantage of that the most? Is it the Carolina Panthers? Is it the San Francisco 49ers? I think that's really going to determine it. And I don't want to like just kind of put that out there, but the Panther season has been filled with a lot of ups and downs, and this feels like coming off a really big up that this could be a really big letdown on a Monday Night Football game. The spread is currently 7 points in favor of San Francisco, so pretty large number. I think they do win this game by a substantial margin and lead for most of it. I think because of their deficiencies on defense, as long as we aren't shooting ourselves in the foot every other drive, there's a chance that we can move the ball and stay in the game. And that's what I'm looking for as a fan. I want to see a competitive matchup on Monday Night Football, showing that we belong at the top of the NFC. We proved that against Green Bay at Lambeau Field. This would be another great showing in front of the primetime audience. It's just, I'm a little concerned because of exactly like I said, with the roller coaster effect, that we end up losing this game by 10 or more points. And for our loyal listeners, Perfect Takes, at Perfect Takes, we have not been hitting our stride recently. It's been almost like the inverse Kramer effect. I think everything I've said over the past 2 weeks, the opposite has happened. So knowing me, we're going to end up finding a way to win this game like we did at Lambeau, and I'm okay with that. But my take still does stand based on the evaluations that I do see the 49ers as a team being able to win by 10 or more points in prime time at home. Again, like you said, I don't know if it's a revenge game of Christian McCaffrey, but he will be a big source of production for this 49ers offense.
You know, I wouldn't mind us winning either, and your take being wrong, but I think that's where I stand as well. So officially, San Francisco wins by double digits.
So they cover the spread, but they win by double digits. And I think it's like one of those games. It's like it's 31-21. And as long as you don't get absolutely humiliated in primetime, I think that's the big takeaway from this is like, don't don't get boat race like you did against the New England Patriots or the Buffalo Bills. Like, that is not what you can have happen. But I do see them just being able to overpower us based on what they can do on offense. And it's hard for me to think that Evero is going to be able to shut that down.
Man, that New England loss looks, it doesn't look better, but it's less hurtful to look at every week just seeing the Patriots stack wins. Last thing I'll say is, you mentioned that the Panthers have had an up and down season with emotional highs and emotional lows. No team has had more of a roller coaster season than the 49ers. Since week three, they have alternated wins and losses every single week. You know what happened last week? They won.
They did win a game against the Cardinals.
I don't want to speak it into existence, but if they're a team that follows trends, might be looking like we walk into Santa Clara with the win there. Hopefully that would be one that we win. But I think until then, it's going to be interesting because we'll watch the game and then record the next day next week. I don't think we've ever had that. I don't think we've ever done a Monday night football game so far. But it'll be interesting for sure. Hopefully we get the win. And until then, you can find us on Twitter, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts at Perfect Takes. And until then, keep pounding.